up to the dirt just like a seed, but you're never quite a flower. You feel more just like a weed. Hello, everybody. This is Galen Lee. Thank you so much for coming to another edition, the 66th week, I think, which is kind of a long time, actually, of the Sunday Sessions. So I'm going to introduce my guest, Jenna Kowaleski, but her writer's name is Jay McKenzie, and she's an author and of mostly young adult fiction, but we can talk more about what else you've done. But Jenna's from Duluth, and we met working at the Boys and Girls Club together many, many, many years ago. So for people who haven't heard of your work, aren't like from the Duluth area, can you kind of explain like what you consider your like path, or like what you, because I mean, you do a lot of different work in the world, like you also do like PR and stuff, but the writing is obviously your passion. So what kind of stuff do you write? Like, what, how did you get started? Just kind of introduce us to you as a writer.
Yeah, so I've been writing forever, as you know, in one way or another. But I would say probably after college is when I really kind of started. I always wanted to write a novel, so I was just like, well, time to do it. So since then, I've written three full-length novel manuscripts and two novellas, and then a bunch of short stories and little short series like I have on my website, just kind of for fun. And so I do all of that in my free time. My 9 to 5, I also do a lot of writing. I'm in the advertising and marketing world. So I do a lot of copywriting in my day to day as well, which is great, between press releases or a little bit of creative copywriting, but it's a little bit more nonfiction and promotional based. Versus in my free time, I like to dabble more into fiction and have a little bit more fun with some like magical elements and things like that.
Yeah, I noticed that. So the thing you're going to read for us today is from your like short story series, right? Is that what it is? Is it going to be a book eventually? Do you see it as a book?
I don't know. So the short story series that I posted on my blog, which I'm going to read a piece from, that is from a series called Martha the Reluctant. And I actually started it during the pandemic last, well, I think even a little bit before, I can't remember, but it kind of kept me going during the first half of the pandemic. So it was just kind of a fun thing that wasn't serious, and it didn't really take place at a very specific time. Yeah. So I was able to just kind of let my imagination run. And then towards the end of the pandemic, I kind of ran out of creative juice. So Martha's kind of had a
so all of us did a little bit. You're right. Yes.
So then, so it could turn into a book.
Will she get continued? Sure. Will she like continue in the world, do you think? Or this is how you're done with it?
Maybe. It depends on where my inspiration comes from. If I get another exciting idea for it, I will. But sometimes after I put something down for a little bit, sometimes I get another great idea and I'm able to run, and sometimes it feels a little stale. And since it's just kind of a writing practice and something I do for fun, I just kind of follow the whim that I find the most interesting at the time.
That's so cool. So let's talk about, actually, do you want to read your thing now and then we can talk, or it's up to you?
Sure. Yeah. So just to introduce, because I actually even shortened the story a little bit for the sake of reading it here. But the idea behind Martha the Reluctant is, I was sitting around one day and I was like, you know, you think about like Harry Potter, where somebody tells him he's a wizard and he's really excited about it. But I was thinking, like, what if she didn't want, like, what if somebody told you you're a witch and you didn't want to be a witch? Yep. And so I like to use like elements of magic to kind of bring out things that are very real, but put it into a different lens. So just really kind of thinking about gifts that we might be given that we don't necessarily want to use. And then just kind of putting a fun spin on it. So in this story, she is downstairs studying and she hears a lot of thumping up in her attic, and she goes upstairs and she sees her mom up there. So that's kind of where this starts off. So I'll jump in. Cool. So this is Martha the Reluctant in the attic. "You okay up here, Mom?" she asked as she walked up the stairs. "Yeah, just, her mom said, lifting up a box that was clearly a little too heavy for her. She plopped it on the ground a couple of feet from where she picked it up. Its contents shuffled and clinked. Martha watched her mom straighten her back and looked at the pile of boxes. "What are you doing?" Martha asked. "Today's the day," she said matter-of-factly. Martha continued to stare at her mom, knowing that her mom would continue to explain her activities with no further prompting. "I'm cleaning out. I'm cleaning it all out." "And you're starting up here?" "Yeah," her mom nodded definitively. "Okay, then," Martha replied. Clearly, her mom was avoiding the basement, or maybe creating more space up here to fill the stuff from the basement. "What's even in these?" Martha asked, pulling up one of the folded ends of a box. "Oh, you know, this and that. It seems to accumulate after a couple of years, though." It was coming. Martha knew it was coming, and the way her mom shifted, and the change in the air in the room. "Want to help?" And there it was. "I'm working on my social studies homework. I heard you clunking around up here. I just wanted to see if you were okay." Her mom looked a little disappointed. She probably didn't want to take on this entire task by herself. Martha couldn't blame her. She didn't want to take on this entire task at all. Why don't you wait until Dad gets home next week? Then at least he can lug around these heavy boxes. "Well, then it wouldn't be a surprise, would it?" her mom replied. "Okay, 20 minutes," Martha sighed. "Great. Okay, first I want to unstack all these boxes, and then we'll start to go through them." Martha hoped her mom had meant the royal we. "Here, start with this one," her mom said, handing her a box of dainty-looking china coffee cups and saucers. "Have we ever used these?" Martha asked, not recognizing anything in the box. "No, a few of these boxes were actually up here when we moved in. I think the sellers forgot about the stuff in the attic. There are a couple of these boxes mixed in here. Put them over there," her mom nodded to the opposite end of the attic, which was open, save for an old fancy-looking dining room table. Two chairs were set at either end, though the other six were missing. Martha always thought the table was pretty, but never knew why they used it. Maybe the previous tenants had forgotten it as well, or didn't want to haul it back down the stairs. Martha put the box gently on the table, knowing that her mom would get angry if she slid it. Martha knew enough to know that she couldn't risk scratching the fancy table. "Martha," her mom scolded her anyway. Thankfully, Martha had a rebuttal at the ready. "What? I didn't scratch it." "What? Scratch what? No, Martha, that's breakable in there. Quit it. Put it on the ground." "Quit what? Isn't this easier on your back?" "Yeah. Yes, Martha. That is very thoughtful. But I'd rather you just put it on the ground. You don't need to use your magic." "Magic? What are you on, Mom?" "Martha, what?" "I just put it on the table," Martha said, exasperated. "What table? Are you joking? Are you?" It dawned on them at the same time. "Wait, so you see a table?" Martha said, finishing her mom's sentence. "Yeah, it's been here since we moved in." "Here?" her mom said, walking right up to the table and waving her hand right through it. "Yeah, your hand just passed through it." "Martha, is this a joke? Because that's not..." Her mom sounded scared. She always had been excited about Martha's magic. Apparently, Martha being able to see a table that was in the house since they moved in that she couldn't see was a line for her mom. Her mom picked up the box half an inch from the table and dropped it. It rushed to the ground surprisingly fast, though it was no faster than gravity's normal pull. Martha reached out her arms to catch it, and while her fingers were too slow, she felt an energy leave her body, and the box of dishes met the ground softly, chinking unhappily against one another. Her mom looked up at her. Her mom took a deep breath. Her mom put a hand on Martha's shoulder and squeezed it. She looked sad, concerned, afraid. "Let's leave the attic for another day, huh? And maybe talk to your teacher, Dr. Ellie, about this. She seemed like she might know what this means. "Okay, Mom, I'll talk to her on Monday." Her mom looked like she was about to say something. "It's been here for at least 12 years, Mom. Two more nights isn't going to hurt anything. Come on, let's go for a walk." "Yeah, okay. Oh, let's go to that ice cream place," her mom said. "Mom," Martha chuckled, relieved that her mom's mood seemed to be turning a corner. There was a forced positivity in her voice, telling Mom that she was faking it for her daughter's sake. Martha thought it would be better to play along anyway. "It's 10:30 in the morning. It'll be 11 by the time we get there, Pokey Pants," her mom said. "Mom," Martha said, following her down the stairs, knowing that her mom was right. She was a slow walker. Moments before Martha's eyes dipped below the attic floor, she heard a tinkle and crackle as the dishes next to the table unpacked themselves. Coffee cups, bread plates, butter dish. They scattered themselves unevenly as if they each had their own very specific place in their place setting. Two boxes up and now behind Martha, in the bottom of the pile, it quivered, but were unable to move. Martha shut the light off quickly and firmly closed the door behind her.
Ooh, I love it. Hold on one sec. I gotta switch gears, switch screens. One second. Okay, cool. So, okay, do you have like a, what happens next? Now I gotta know.
Well, there are, so the stories are a little scattered, but the idea is that eventually they all kind of come together. But there is an entity in the attic that Martha unwillingly unleashes. And then what happens next, I don't really know yet because I haven't written it.
So. So is it a bad entity or a good entity?
I don't think it's a friendly entity. It's going to force Martha to really, she goes to this special school with a bunch of other witches that she doesn't really want to be in anyway. And so this teacher that her mom wants her to talk about, she keeps avoiding to talk to the teacher. And eventually all of these issues start piling up and it's going to make her really come face to face with her abilities and eventually have to really face what she is and who she is so that she can tackle it.
Can you please finish this story so I can read the whole thing?
You know, my mom and my husband have both been asking me this. So
seriously.
I will try. Okay. Now that baby's here, that was the other thing that really slowed down the writing because just being pregnant during a pandemic was a very exhausting experience.
Yeah.
So now that both of those things have, one is definitively ended and one is kind of on the slide, I've been able to write a little bit more. So I am hoping to get that mojo back up and continue writing that.
Yeah, so I really hope you do because I will read it and make everyone I know read it. So one of the people in the audience, Tina McKee, she asked, what kind of books do you write? So you, what I've heard is mostly young adult fiction, right? Have you done other things as well? Or like, is that a, what, or why do you like that category if that's what you mostly do write in?
Yeah, so my first and my third novel are both young adult fiction and with like an element of magic, kind of like Martha the Reluctant. And they both just fit my personality and the concept I was trying to tell. So the like with my writing process, I basically get an idea of kind of a cool concept and then I flesh out a world around it and a story behind it and then characters to kind of play with that idea, like the core idea that I have. Kind of like with Martha, the core idea was a witch that didn't want to be a witch. And so two of my books were just fit that really well. And then my second book is actually, or my third book is, it's just contemporary fiction, which was new and different for me. I've never written that before, but again, I just had the idea. And then I built the world up around the idea that I had. So that's a little bit more of the process than anything. And then my two novellas, one is an allegory, and it's kind of like the farm. I don't know, that's not, is that what it's called? You know what I'm talking about? The one with the pig on it.
Oh, Animal Farm?
Animal Farm, thank you.
Yeah.
And then the other one is about my great-grandma Anna's life, because she lived at in the early 1920s, all of her siblings had passed away by the time she was in her late teens. And wow. So she took over and supported her mom. And then she worked at a talkie and met my grandpa or my great grandpa. So it's just a cute story. So
that's cool. Okay. First of all, I've known you for a very long time and I did not realize that you would put magical elements into your writing. Cause I actually hadn't read like a lot of your stuff, the magical elements are a surprise. Were you like a huge Harry Potter fan growing up, or was there some other thing that made you really like want to infuse it? Because I think that's a super fun genre. I read a lot of those.
Yeah, and it's not really my personality either.
That's what I'm trying to say. You're very like practical human being. So I was like, weird. That is a surprise to me. What made you inspired to include those elements?
I think there is a little bit of the Harry Potter piece to it, but also this place that we live in. So my first book that I wrote actually when we knew each other working at the Boys and Girls Club together, when we met each other, it's called Addie. And it's about somebody who has a sixth sense who can see people's emotions.
Cool.
And it's really heavily tied to Duluth and agates, which for people who aren't from Duluth is like a really specific type of rock that has these really beautiful lines and colors and striations to them. And so I brought in just kind of some like kind of magic that I feel living in the city of Duluth and mixed that in with this character and this like heightened sense of empathy is really the idea behind being able to see people's emotions, is that these people who have the skill can like are more empathetic, and whether they use that skill for good or for bad is then their choice. Mm-hmm. And then the book that I'm trying to find an agent for right now is called The Platya. And that was also based off of, I went to a Circus World Museum, which is in central Wisconsin. If you're ever driving through Baraboo, Wisconsin, to stop at the Circus World Museum. And I was there and nobody else was there. So it was a little eerie. And it felt like I knew I was alone, but it didn't feel like I was alone. And again, that was like the core idea that I played with. And so I brought in this magical idea of elements hold memories. So I would be alone in this room, but I'm surrounded by memories that all of these objects contained. So I built up a whole world around that, and somebody who's trying to take these memories. And humans aren't supposed to do that. So.
Well, that's good. I'm glad we had that. That would not be good. Well, that is really interesting. So that's what the Platya is about?
Yeah. And that's the one that... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. That's the one that you are looking for an agent for. Is that also young adult fiction then?
Yeah. It's the protagonist is in her early 20s. So that's one of the things that I've learned in the world of publishing, is that I'm having a hard time finding it's actually a new adult is the category. So I think that this book could be in the just regular fiction, magical realism kind of category for adults. It's a little old for young adult, but I've had some people tell me that's new adult. I've also had some agents tell me that new adult as a category doesn't actually exist. So I think that the book is really good. I like the idea of writing about somebody in their early 20s because it is a really underrepresented like life moment.
That's
you just don't read a lot of books with that age group. So I want to potentially keep her at that age, but she's having a hard time finding a home because of that age.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, so we could talk all day, I'm sure, about this part of it, but like, it is not like you write a book and then everything ends happily ever after necessarily. I mean, like there's a lot behind the scenes stuff that embarking on this memoir, just had no freaking idea about, like, and I should have. I mean, you probably could figure it out, but there was a time when I realized, like, wow, if you're going to kind of work with a smaller place and not have, like, an agent, you still need to have the book, well, in the memoir category, so that's a difference, actually. In the memoir category, you have to have the book completely outlined and fleshed out and a summary available, and like, and then they can tell you, oh, we want you to cut this part, and before you write it, because the part that's a possibility that I wasn't aware of is that they could read your memoir and be like, yeah, cut like 80% of it, so they would rather that you like tell them what you're planning to include, and then they can kind of guide you. And I didn't realize, I guess, how much the author working with a publishing company to make something that they actually want to publish. It's not like they take your book and say, this is great. You had an editor. It's cool. Like they can kind of guide like what they want to see in your book. And that was interesting. So like theoretically you could get somebody to work with the Platya, but they would say, we want her to be 33, right? I mean, that could happen. Is that?
Yeah. And yeah. So from what I've learned through copious amounts of research, like you, and fiction and nonfiction is so different. So that's why I'm really interested in your process, because it's so different from the process I've been in and trying to find an agent. But basically you go through the step, you find an agent and the agent's like, this is great. And then the agent can give you a ton of feedback and notes and edits. And then once the agent is happy with it, then it goes to gets fished out and they try to find a publisher. And if you do find a publisher, then you get matched with an editor, and then the editor might have 1,000 notes and changes for you. So that was something that I kind of learned as well. It's like, just because your draft is done doesn't mean your book is done by any stretch of the imagination. But I also think that there's a lot of strength in that process, just from in my professional life, all of the edits that I make to other people's work, I can always see the work gets stronger. So I think that there is something to having that collaborative process, even though, even specifically with a memoir, that's such a personal story, but having people give feedback, and I think stories are always the stronger for it.
Oh,
so
yeah, totally. Well, so what I've been doing, even just for this book proposal, is once a month I've been meeting with like kind of a mentor. She's published a lot of different, like she's done, I think, one memoirish book and one fiction book, but she's done, you know, worked with a lot of different authors on the getting it out in the world part of it. And I showed her the outline, all the guts of it, you know, like where you're like, I probably wouldn't show this to very many people right now. I showed it to her and she had some really good feedback about like, you got to make sure the main characters like Paul and, you know, your parents are introduced like right away instead of like in the order they appear in your life, because Paul is such a big part of your life, for example, that you can't wait and make his, you know, so just like feedback like that, where I was like, okay, that actually is going to be a better story because of the way, and she helped me think of the idea of two timelines. So, you know, I was telling her I was concerned about writing a book about my life and not mentioning music until, you know, I'm 20 when I start performing in public, right? And she and I together kind of discussed and thought of this two timeline story. So it's like every other chapter, childhood music, childhood music, childhood music. And I think that'll be more interesting anyways to write even. Like, I think it's going to be more fun to write. And then also, I think probably a lot more fun to read, because I like books like that. I mean, everybody's got their own preferences, but I enjoy books where they tie different timelines together. I just think it's a cool.
Yeah, I agree. I like books with structures that are a little bit more different. I mean, a linear structure can work out great depending on the story that's being, that somebody's trying to tell. But like one of my books, the Placia that I had mentioned, I wrote that kind of like, I don't know if, how many people have read American Gods by Neil Gaiman, but there's one consistent narrative, but then he breaks it up with these stories about the different gods in between.
Cool.
So then at the end, when it all comes together and all of these, the main character storyline comes together with all of these gods' stories that he told throughout the story, it all kind of comes together and you understand everything that, you know, in one end. And I think that I kind of like that as a reader, because you're dropping these hints and I think it can keep the reader more engaged as you go through it, because it's like, ooh, why did they bring this up? When is this going to come back? You know?
Yeah.
It's kind of for me, it's like a carrot to get to the end sometimes too.
Yeah. Yeah. There are. I'm hoping not to have any parts of the book where people are like, oh, can't wait till this chapter's over. But there are,
that's gonna happen at
but
all.
There are books like that where you're like, I'm gonna keep going because I still wanna know how they're gonna resolve it, even though if this was just a continually storyline, I might have lost interest at this point. But you know, the alternating story can kind of keep you going if it's not your bag, the one storyline. The other one.
Or just if your attention is kind of like being pulled in five different directions, then it'd be like, oh, this is mixing it up a little bit, and that sort of thing too.
Yeah. So somebody asked, you should, or somebody said, Anthony Anders said, you should write that Martha the Reluctant for your baby boy so that he has something to read when he grows up. So that's a good motivating factor. Have you thought about that? Like writing stuff that he might read someday?
I've already written him a little book.
Really?
Yeah. A week after I brought him home, I just had this, like, I was sitting, I'm in the nursery right now, sitting in the chair behind me, and I had this whole little children's book come to me. So I wrote it really quick, and I don't know if you're familiar with Canva as, like, a design tool.
Yeah, I use that all the time.
Yeah, so I just put, it's a free online design tool for anybody who's not familiar with it, and I just put it in there, and right now I'm just pulling some, like, little pre-made little, you know, cartoons or whatever. And, you know, it doesn't have to be Shakespeare or anything, because it's going to be him, and his mom made it for him. So hopefully it'll be good enough.
he won't be like, this is garbage when he's older.
Well, because I was thinking about Leif Anger, who is another local author. I don't know if you've heard of him.
No,
he wrote Peace Like a River, which is so good. I ran into him at a local book signing, and he said that he wrote that for his kid and is an incredibly good book. So I feel like with people have that specific person in mind that they're writing for, it can actually make the book stronger because there's a little bit more of a focus and continuity to it. So who knows? Maybe my great novel will come next when I'm writing it for Noah. But
that's so cute. Wait, so didn't Winnie the Pooh get started that way? As like actually written for a little boy?
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think that actually, because the cool part is then you kind of know that kid, so they already have a built-in, you're writing it for a very specific kid, which is universal but specific at the same time. So that's really cool. So then what is your, like, how do you write? Like, you write a lot. Like, I mean, I envy, like, I've been reading, like, Anne Lamott's book on writing.
Oh, yeah, Bird.
Yep, and I just started Stephen King's book on writing. And
oh,
I mean,
so good.
Like, writers really write a lot. So are you one of those people that have, like, a schedule? Or how do you fit it in? It's, well, I mean, it's a little different now with pandemic than straight on to baby. But, like, well, how have you done it in the past so that you actually do get these books done? I think that's pretty impressive.
I was going to ask you the same question. So after I answer, you have to answer. So ever since I decided that I was going to write, I set an hour to 2 hours aside every weekday morning. And on Saturdays, I would set 3 to 4 hours aside. Obviously, if it's like Christmas Day or something, I would, you know, don't write. But for the most part, when I was able to actually be the most productive and I think write my strongest work was when I was waking up literally every single day and I would just kind of keep that thought process going. And the great thing about waking up at like 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the morning to write is that if you're like feeling kind of distracted and you're like, I'm just going to like check Instagram and kind of get my brain going, I have this thought process of like only a crazy person wakes up at 5 o'clock in the morning to check Instagram. Like that, like what weirdo does that? So by like doing a little bit of self-sacrifice, it actually got me a lot more focused. And then once the baby starts sleeping more than 3 hours at a time, I'm hoping to basically get back into that rhythm of waking up at like 5:30 and just writing before I go to work. Because it's a quiet time. I think I can't remember if it is Anne Lamott who said get a door. Which, whether it's a physical door or a mental door, for me, my door is that really early morning period because there's nothing else going on. Nobody's emailing me. Nothing's going on in the house. It's dark. I couldn't call anybody if I wanted to because they would hate me. Like there's no distractions. And also like if there's something else about somebody was like, you have to leave the dust bunnies. You have to be able to look at a dust bunny and be like, I will get to you later. I'm not going to clean you up right now. Because it's really, really easy, especially if you're writing in your home, to get really distracted. So it's taken a lot of like getting used to the idea of like, I'm going to pick that up later. It's okay. I'm going to write right now. Like, this is why I woke up early. And my husband's going to be really frustrated with me if I start like sweeping and vacuuming
at 5:30 in the morning. So 5:30, oh my gosh, I am the biggest night owl. That sounds like, basically you're like, I just have to climb Mount Everest and then I'm really productive.
Well, this is why you and I have a hard time hanging out. Because
yes, we do. Our schedules are like completely opposite. But that is good to know. So that's the thing is I've been experimenting lately. Because I got to admit, the last month or so, my focus and just like my energy, I don't know, something like, I don't know if it's post-COVID sort of semi-depression or what is going on, but I was like, I got to get back on track. So I worked with I have a business coach that I meet with when I'm like, oh, crap. Because being self-employed, you really got to do your stuff on your own. Like it's just so different than going to an office and being like, I did my work and now I leave. So I talked to her and we have a plan, which I just started last week, which helped a lot of just like, the first hour, because I have an office that I'm renting this summer to get away, because we don't have a door. We live in a studio apartment. There is no doors. And so the first hour that I'm there, at least, but then if I feel like keeping going, then I can focus on working on the book. So like, I can't wait for this outline to be done, because then I can just sit and write, and that I enjoy a lot more. Like, it flows the outline is more just like, it's almost like a map. Like, I think I actually am going to have to make a little map of, like, what is the main theme of this chapter? So that's the other thing that's interesting. I don't know if that's the case with fiction, but with the memoir, didn't know going into it, but it makes complete sense. It's like each chapter kind of has to have an overarching theme. You're not just, like, saying this is what happened at age 13. I mean, duh, right? Except for I didn't think of it in that exact way when I started writing the outline. So now I have the outline pretty much done. I have like one more chapter to outline, but then I'm going to have to go back and be like, okay, what is the main theme of each chapter? Because that's what holds a memoir together. And it's just a lot. It's so cool because this is not what I set out to do professionally when I went into music, obviously, but I think it's going to be a really good, it's a learning curve for sure in ways I wasn't expecting, like that whole idea of like, oh crap, what is the main theme of my college life? Because you don't actually live thinking this is the main theme of my 20s. Like, nobody walks around living like that.
And why are you telling, like, why are you telling it here?
Yeah, exactly.
So like, and then how has this impacted the overarching thing that you're trying to say?
Yep. Which is another thing, like, for me, what I set out to do when I started the book is I basically want to just present a different narrative about disability, that disability isn't inherently negative, and that we need to shift our thinking away from, like, avoiding disability or, like, pitying disability to just supporting it. Because I think, like, I don't know, I think people with disabilities with the right supports, even though they might struggle, we all struggle. I mean, all of us could get Alzheimer's disease when we get old. Like, everybody struggles with different things. But in terms of disability and your daily life, the support is what makes all the difference. It's not really, you know what I'm trying to say? Like, the disability itself isn't inherently making your life automatically more negative or, like, less fulfilling or less productive even. And so I think changing the narrative, that's what I wanted to do in a book. But when you realize, like, oh, people are actually going to be sitting here investing hours of their lives reading, it has to be a little more clarified than that. And so that's the process. I'm so glad that I'm doing the book outline, even though it's kind of driving me up a wall, is because it's nice to have those thoughts now instead of writing the whole book and then being like, what? You had to have a theme? Like, that would have been so tragic. So it's a good learning curve, but it's pretty intense. I mean, but for you, for fiction, I mean, do you have, I suppose you have a premise. Is that kind of like your overarching theme? Or do you also have like a theme, like a moral theme or like a educational theme that kind of weaves throughout the whole book? Like, or is it the premise?
Yeah, it kind of depends. So it's interesting hearing about your writing process because it's actually a little bit like mine, where you started with an idea, you started going, and then it's like pause and outline it and then finish writing it. Yeah. And that's kind of how I do it too. I usually get up to like 30,000 words and then I'll pause and be like, okay, where am I driving this bus? Because in the first 30,000 words, I can figure out, I think I have like three or four novels that are around that 30,000 word mark that, like, I just couldn't, I like flushed it out. The idea is not going anywhere. It's dead. But cause that's what, like, that's where I can kind of figure out, like, where am I taking this? And then during the rewrite process is where then I like bring some of those pieces back in at the beginning that may be like, okay, this sounds like really hokey, but like I let the characters tell me who they want to be and where they want to go. And I let them kind of develop out into who they're going to be. And then I kind of can see, like, through, this is really hokey, but like kind of through what my subconscious was trying to do with them.
Yeah.
And then I can kind of see, like, oh, okay, this is what I'm really trying to say here. And then I've had, for me, the editing process, like I go through, I write the draft, I let it sit, and then I go through a big edit, and then I give it to people to read and get their feedback on. And I had one person give me feedback on a theme that I didn't even see. But then I looked at it, I'm like, oh, this is actually the point of the book that I was trying to say. And I just, like, I was too close to it. Yeah. So, like, at least for me, but I'm also, doing this for fun. And if I can find a publisher, that would be like my life dream. It would be great. But at the end of the day, this is just also how I like to spend my free time. I don't have like a set deadline, so I can be like, oh, that's the theme. I can go back and rewrite it because it's a hobby for me until it becomes something else. So there's a little bit of when I start to take it too seriously, my husband reminds me that I'm doing this for fun. So then I like take a step back. I'm like, okay, this is a fun thing. And I think my writing is the strongest too. When I'm having fun with it, I'm not trying to also like push something into it that doesn't need to be there.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's so interesting the role that spouses play. I was just reading last night that apparently Stephen King's book, Carrie, the first book that got like picked up by a major publisher, he threw it away and his wife found it in the garbage and was like, oh, this is actually good. You should finish this book, because he had written like a couple chapters and chucked it. And so I think spouses can help keep you on like, yeah, this is just for fun. But then also hopefully encourage you to like, you know, if you want to try. I think that's the interesting part, is you're writing books that are complete and then you look for a publisher. So I suppose if you enjoy writing books and you're doing it because it's something, it's your passion and you love it, you can keep writing books and keep looking for publishers. And all it really takes is like one publisher to say yes, I suppose.
Just right? Takes one yes.
Yeah, exactly. So it could still be something that you end up doing like for your career, but at the end of the day, you'll have all this material. Have you thought about self-publishing at all or not yet?
I have. It doesn't hold the same allure for me. Yeah. I've given it a lot of thought and I've kind of bounced it around. There's some things like the story that I wrote about my great grandma. I threw that up on Amazon for a couple weeks just so that my family could download it to their Kindles and stuff, and it would format nicely and that sort of thing. But that was the purpose. Like, I wrote that for that group so that they could read it. And like the book that I just wrote for my son, it's going to have one copy and it's going to be great. And hopefully he loves it. But I think as far as there's like, I don't know what it is in me, but like, I think I just like want the validation of going through the full process. But the full process can be anything. So I have very conflicting thoughts on this, because I, on one hand, get really frustrated because there is this really hard barrier that I keep running into getting my work out into the world, which I really want. Like, I want other people to enjoy my work and to get joy from it. But on the other hand, I want to, there's something about like ever since I was little, like I want the full official process. It's like a validating thing that, like, I don't know, maybe it's an ego thing. I don't know, but I keep waiting.
No, I mean, I think it's, well, just don't give up. I mean, as well, you know, I think it's really inspiring that you're writing and not having that all squared away yet, because I think some people are like, oh, I can't get published, I'm going to quit writing. But you love to write, so you should just keep writing, and then eventually it will probably happen. I mean, I can't imagine. I think in the long run, you're not like 90 years old. You know what I mean? You
got some time. Well, and there's stuff that like the Martha stories that I've been writing. I've just been popping those onto my blog. So, you know, it's like, I think they're fun. I want other people to think they're fun. I want to get them out there right away. And you know what? There's probably some typos in there. And I get it, because I'm publishing these things at like 5 o'clock in the morning. So like typos are going to happen. Yeah. I do my best, but they squeak through. And that's okay, because I want to get out there. I want to share it. My mom loves them.
I love them. I'm serious. I was like, yes, they're on the blog. There's a ton of them. So
my mom would get really excited every time I published them. So it's like I have different pieces of writing that I use for different purposes. Some things I write, I'm like, oh, this is going to be great for a contest. And so I'll keep it and I'll enter it into contests. And I just had one win last summer, which was really great. So it depends. I think maybe it comes back to like the type of material. And why I wrote it. And so there's a couple novels that I wrote that I'm pretty married to the idea of going through the full, a publishing process with. There's other things that I'm just like, this was kind of fun and I want other people to read it. So
yeah, well, I get that. I mean, I can't imagine pretty soon we have to go because I'm going to play a couple of tunes. But how many hours, what would you estimate the number of hours writing a novel is? Because I don't know if I'd want to just like put it up for free on like a blog that no one's going to like. Like hundreds and hundreds of hours, right?
I can tell you that it takes me years from the moment I have the idea to when it's done. Also because I'm doing this in my free time.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, from the beginning to the end, it takes a really long time. So
you don't want to just throw it up. Yep. You might want to wait for that process. Cause I mean, it helps to know that at least if it gets to a publisher, there's a very good chance that a lot more people are going to read it than if you self-publish it. That's just the reality of it. Right. Yeah.
Like, you know, a Martha story. I've got like an hour into it. It's kind of a fun thing. Throw it up there. And, yep. You know.
Yep. So. No, that's, I was talking to Paul before I signed on with you, and I was saying it's such a different world as an author than a musician, because I can self-produce my CDs and put them on Bandcamp, but the reality is I'm going to go on tour and play these songs, so people will hear them. But if you, and so I don't feel a strong need to look for a record label or get a huge publicist or whatever, because I enjoy the process of like traveling and playing shows. But what I don't know how authors, I mean, that's not really an option. I guess you could do like book readings all over the country for the heck of it, but without a publisher, you guys, I mean, that is a totally different like setup kind of, right? Where
I feel like the marketing and advertising of a book should be like another, that could be a whole other session, I think. Because even if you do, from what I understand, even if you do get an agent and end up in a big publishing house, a lot of it does fall on the individual author for the marketing.
Yep, and everybody's told me that for sure.
Yeah. And so you've got like a built-in tour, so you can, you know, kind of do double work with being out there and maybe read a little excerpt and have the book on the back table along with your CDs and stuff. I don't know. I've been to quite a few author book signings, and you don't really pack them in as much as you do for like a concert. Unless if you're like Elizabeth Gilbert, she like, you know, sold out the auditorium, but
she did. Well, yeah. And Michelle Obama, those two.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The stadium, you know, there's, you know, J.K. Rowling, I'm sure even with some of the controversy around her right now, could probably, you know, maybe even 3 years ago, let's put it there, but she could fill up a whole stadium. But for your average author, you know, it's probably not the same kind of turnout that you get.
Well, let's be clear. I'm not filling up stadiums at this point. So, but I think you're right. Like people, books, you have to already know and love the author to be like, where a musician, you'll be like, yeah, maybe I'll go. Pretty much.
Right. Versus like, you're not going to be like, oh, a book signing for an author in a book I've never heard of.
Exactly. Ooh, yeah. So you got to, yeah, it's a different world. So I commend you. I think it's really, really, really cool that you're like, even in the baby pandemic era, that you're still writing. And I hope that I really think it'd be super fun to have a Martha the Reluctant book. I'm just going to throw that out there. It's a very cool premise. And I just hope that, yeah, eventually you find that path that like lets you continue to do it as much as you want. I'm sure. I'm glad that you're doing it even while you're working and stuff. I think that's pretty awesome. A lot of people.
Yeah, I just had a new idea. So I'm in the first couple thousand words of a.
Are you excited about it?
I'm really excited about it, and Josh, my husband, is excited about it. So that's a good sign. Thank you so much for having me. It's fun to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you, and thanks, and we'll probably do this again when my book is done. I think it'd be fun to talk to you one more time.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. And good luck with the writing process. It's a lot of work, but I'm so excited to read your book. I can't even tell you.
Yay. Thank you so much. Yeah, no, it's going to be fun. I'm getting to the part where I'm like just about to get to just write. And that part, I'm really looking forward to that. So cool. Yeah. Well, thank you, Jenna. Take care and happy Father's Day to Josh. Okay.
Sounds good. All right. Yeah. Take care. Bye.
Bye. Pushing up through the dirt just like a seed, but you're never quite a flower. You feel more just like a weed.